You're listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. Hosted by political visionary and entrepreneur Rick Raddatz, political expert and radio broadcaster Jay Amernick, and me, journalist in all media Heather Vale Goss, The Political Fix reveals the answers we're all looking for. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com. Welcome to the show on Wednesday, May 28th. I'm Heather Vale Goss. Joining me today are my co-hosts, as always, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Jay Amernick's a radio talk show host and former TV writer, also a strategic planner who helps his clients create and implement plans, goals, tactics, and benchmarks. Rick Raddatz is a serial entrepreneur with a degree in philosophy, which led to his development that he calls The Solution, and Pentonomics, which is the philosophy behind The Solution. I'm Heather Vale Goss, a freelance journalist, peeling away the layers of the onion, and that's why I'm known as The Unwrapper. Guys, welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you?
Hey, Heather, before we dive in, I want to know, why is Jay introduced as a radio show host, but you and I aren't?
Oh, because
I have nothing else in my life.
That's what. Yeah, he's like a. The way that you have multiple businesses, Rick. Jay has multiple radio shows. He's just like he's addicted
so,
to hosting
radio. So you need two shows to be a radio show host.
And I do have multiple. businesses as well, but.
Yeah, no, he's got multiple ones.
Okay.
I mean, I've done a lot of radio, but this is yeah.
I'm sending Heather a list of all my businesses.
All right. All right, I'll set my goals higher then. Okay.
All right. So yeah.
Maybe we should do another radio show. Why people have so many radio shows?
That's a good idea. Yeah, I think it's an addiction. Honestly, I think that there needs to be a radio show intervention or something going on. But actually, Jay because Jay and I were going to have a radio show called Vegas Over 40, and I convinced him that it should be a video show. So it is no longer a radio show. It's going to be an online TV show. So,
yes.
Otherwise, he just would have tipped the scale. That's way too many radio shows to host. Just saying.
And I don't have to wear headphones.
Yeah. Yeah. You don't have to wear headphones for the video show. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, how's your week going, guys? I think Rick, I don't know, like the people on the radio won't know this, but the people that are watching on the Hangouts at politicalfixradio.com will know that Rick's looking a little underdressed today. He's got the baseball cap going on. Actually, he does look like he's from Colorado, but I mean, what's the deal?
Yeah, we didn't interrupt your golf game to have the show, did we?
No, it's a simple matter of laundry. My wife's been pretty busy recently, and I don't do laundry. So as the week progresses, you see more and more creative clothing outfits. And now we're down to a T-shirt I haven't worn in about a year and a baseball cap. So.
Okay. Well,
I don't know that a T-shirt and a baseball cap qualifies as creative, by the way.
I don't know if actually the baseball cap makes sense with that description. I mean, there's no reason add a baseball cap.
You add in the bad hair day, and you get the baseball cap. So it's that.
What hair, Rick? What hair? I mean,
yeah. You need to have hair to have a bad hair day.
Right here. Let's not get into
But he shaves. I mean, his head's practically shaved. Anyway, okay, fine.
Is that better?
Yeah.
Does it look less casual without the baseball cap?
Yeah. No.
Okay. Let's start solving political problems. How about that?
Yeah. So speaking of that, Rick, why don't you tell everyone what the philosophy is behind Pentonomics and The Solution?
Okay. Well, let's focus on the solution itself this time instead of the philosophy. The solution is called cap and prioritize. And what we're going to do is, it's a two-step process. We're going to cap the heck out of government so that the political right is happy. But we're also going to maintain the purchasing power of government. So we have this constant purchasing power, and we're going to prioritize it and reprioritize it more transparently. There's ways of doing that. And the transparency of a prioritized budget is going to force what's left of government to help the people who need help most. In fact, it's going to constantly discover better and better ways to use that constant purchasing power. In other words, we're going to have a government with cap and prioritize that constantly shrinks as a percentage of the economy, trending towards maximum freedom, but also constantly improves its ability to affect social justice. And that's what the political left wants. So this is the ultimate solution to our country's political problems, cap and prioritize.
Okay, cool.
There you go.
All right. So
now that we've solved all the world's problems, let's talk about skydiving. You guys went skydiving last week,
Jay,
I hear. Is that right?
And I went indoor skydiving last Thursday, and that was really
cool. Oh, it was indoor skydiving?
Yes, indoor
skydiving. That's not skydiving. Yeah. You just said skydiving before the show. That doesn't count.
She said indoor.
That's like rolling
indoor.
Around on a cushion of air. That's a sleep number marathon big. That's all that is.
No, it is.
It was fun.
It was a lot of fun, and it's the same sensation as skydiving, just not, you know, jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, as they say.
Right. Yeah. And
have you guys gone real skydiving?
I don't want to do that. Yeah, that does not seem appealing to me at all, being way up there.
Okay. Well, as a hang glider, I can tell you it is not the same experience.
Indoor hang gliding?
No, real hang gliding. I jump off of cliffs and stuff. Whoosh.
Right.
That was in my younger days. But yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So you don't do that anymore?
No. I did it enough to get licensed and to have some fun, but if I was to keep on doing it and keep on advancing and growing in that sport, then that's where it can get a little dangerous. The beginners don't often die. It's the advanced people who are trying more advanced things that push the limits and go too far. So
interesting. Okay.
So I did it for a little bit and then said, okay, I've done that. I've had the experience. And what's really funny is I'm afraid of heights. Okay, I'm definitely afraid of heights. But when I'm strapped into my hang glider, I don't have that sensation. I feel like I have the control I need to handle it, and I love it. It was weird.
That's really interesting, actually, because I am afraid of heights as well, but I don't know, hang gliding actually seems like it would be fun, I have to admit. Not so much skydiving. I don't think that seems fun, but who knows, maybe someday I'll try it. Never say never, right? So do you guys want to hear the top story?
Well, you can try it as a tandem first. Yeah. What's the top story?
All right, so the top story is... In a broad defense of his foreign policy, President Barack Obama declared today that the U.S. remains the world's most indispensable nation, even after a long season of war, as he says. But he also argued for restraint before embarking on more military adventures. Standing before the newest class of officers graduating from the U.S. Military Academy, Obama said, "I would betray my duty to you and to the country we love if I sent you into harm's way simply because I saw a problem somewhere in the world that needed fixing, or because I was worried about critics who think military intervention is the only way for America to avoid looking weak." Obama's speech signaled a concerted effort by the White House to push back against those critics who contend that the president's approach to global problems has been too cautious and has emboldened adversaries in Syria, Russia, and China. The criticism frustrates the president and his advisors who say Obama's efforts to keep the U.S. out of more military conflicts are in line with the views of the American public. Even as the U.S. emerges from the two wars that followed the September 11th, 2001 attacks, Obama said terrorism remains the most direct threat to American security. But he argued that as the threat has shifted from a centralized al-Qaeda to an array of affiliates, the American response must change too. Rather than launching large-scale military efforts, Obama called for partnering with countries where terrorist networks seek a foothold. That effort includes a new $5 billion fund to help countries fight terrorism and to expand funding for Defense Department intelligence, surveillance, reconnaissance, special operations, and other activities. Obama cast the bloody civil war in Syria as more of counterterrorism challenge than a humanitarian crisis. He defended his decision to keep the U.S. military out of the conflict, but said he would seek to increase support for the Syrian opposition, as well as neighboring countries, including Jordan, Lebanon, Turkey, and Iraq, that have faced an influx of refugees and fear the spread of terrorism. The president's speech came one day after he outlined plans to wind down America's lengthy war in Afghanistan by the end of 2016. The blueprint for that calls for keeping almost 10,000 troops in Afghanistan for training and counterterrorism even after combat missions end later this year, but then withdraw them within 2 years. And that's our top story. Thoughts?
Okay. So, in general, overall, it's an okay strategy. I wouldn't have said it out loud like that. Because you look at, obviously that's no matter what you say, that's pretty much every president's goal is to not, engage us in a morass, but sometimes it happens. But saying out loud, he doesn't want to do it. What made presidents like JFK and Ronald Reagan so strong was because they, JFK, famously said, we will pay any price, go any length to defend our allies and to fight our enemies. That's, that's strength. Now, whatever it ends up, meaning is different. Ronald Reagan, had a similar rhetoric, but to say this, out loud, he's right. Obviously, he would be doing a disservice to them to send them into harm's way on a whim. But they're not the only ones listening to that speech. And it's all the bad actors. And as far as what he said about Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda was pretty much always decentralized. Al-Qaeda is Arabic for the base. And it was always, that was one of the things that Osama bin Laden used to do. That's, he would put out the call and just, whatever lone wolf went a little nuts and did it, he would say, look, that wasn't me. I mean, he was the first terrorist, leader of a terrorist group to do that and not to keep it all under his umbrella and take credit for it. Badr Manhoff, the Turkish Grey Wolves, the Italian Red Brigades, all always took credit for their act.
Interesting.
The PLO, whomever, they're all, that's what they did.
Okay.
Yeah, so, in my opinion, I agree with Jay that it's wrong to do what he did in public. The whole point of diplomacy is to have both a public message and also a private message. And we in the public, we're not going to see the private messages. We don't know what's really going on behind the scenes, and we shouldn't. There has to be that communication, and mature adults have to be in charge. Obama reminds me of an employee who, for the first time ever, gets promoted to manager. And as an employee, employees are like mad at management for doing this wrong and this wrong and making you work and making you do this, making you check in and keep track of things. And so then when they get a first chance of being a manager, they like do the opposite of what smart managers do. And it's not until they learn the hard way, typically, if they learn at all, that it doesn't work that way. And so Obama is expressing publicly as the commander in chief the same complaints that the immature side of American politics often talks about. And to say that publicly is just promoting weakness. And indirectly, that's what causes problems around the world, because when America is strong, when our diplomacy is backed by a strong national defense and the feeling that we will use it if appropriate, then the bad actors get more quiet. Okay, they'll still do bad stuff, but they'll think twice. They'll do it smaller. They'll creep around, but they're not going to like invade Crimea. Okay, Putin invaded Crimea because he could. He made the estimate based on what happened in Syria, based on what happened in the Middle East, and so on. And Putin was right. Democracies don't want to go to war. There is a high bar for us to go to war, but we shouldn't be proud of that publicly. We should talk strong be strong, and then in private, encourage people to act better.
Okay, so you don't think that his advisors are right in saying that that view is in line with the views of the American public? Because if it is in line, then there shouldn't be a problem with saying it out loud.
No. Well, first of all, when it comes to security, quite frankly, the American public opinion, most people don't understand. Of course, everybody wants to, put all our weapons in a smelting pot and melt them down and hug each other and sing Kumbaya. That is not realpolitik. That's not what the world is. And the people who are into that can put flowers in their hair and dance around in a circle and bang drums all they like. That is public opinion, but it ain't right. It's not the world we live in. Just because we start doing that doesn't mean that Osama bin Laden, whomever is running al-Qaeda at this point, is going to start doing that. It doesn't mean that Bashar al-Assad is going to start doing that. There are bad people in this world. There is good and there is evil, and most people don't fully grasp that or don't fully want to believe that. They want to believe that we can somehow change them. I remember after 9/11, there were a bunch of hippy dippy, psychologists and sociologists saying, next time you're on a plane and you're sitting next to somebody, who looks like they may be a terrorist, introduce themselves. You tell them your name. Maybe they won't set off their bomb if they know your name. And I'm like, you are a complete idiot who has no understanding of what terrorism is or what the terrorist mindset is. This was someone being interviewed seriously on CNN. And it was just, I was in shock. But this that's like the worst advice you can give.
Well, if it was a movie, that would probably play out where suddenly he had second thoughts because he knew this person sitting beside that. Yeah, I mean, that's fiction.
But someone who's going to put a bomb doesn't have second thoughts. The suicide bomber is completely isolated for 2 or 3 weeks before they go out. They're indoctrinated.
Brainwashed.
They're pumped up. I say indoctrinated.
Exactly what you're describing. That's the process of brainwashing.
Right, of course. And then they make a video saying goodbye to their family and the whole thing and the martyrdom and all that.
And they're expecting all these virgins once they blow up.
Well, regardless of that, what they're promised in the hereafter. But the bottom line is that they're put in this situation. So me saying, hey, I'm Jay, ain't gonna change his mind at that point. Hey, I'm Jay. I have 5 kids. That none of that is going to matter to him. He doesn't care. So to suggest that, it was just bad advice.
And you know what? If we are still the most indispensable nation, it's not because of Obama's policies. It's because of the momentum of the policies of a past president. Now, American diplomacy and defense have never been perfect. I mean, I'm not claiming that. We make mistakes. But there's enough of past action of America that was strong. World War I, World War II, even Vietnam, was drawing a line in the sand and saying, communism can't spread. At least we'll fight against it. We'll lose 50,000 soldiers defending that. And, the nations, think of which nations would have fallen to communism if we hadn't drawn the line in Vietnam. We eventually lost Vietnam, but other nations were very grateful for us holding the line for that time. So, and the idea that terrorism is our most direct threat, well, maybe direct threat, but not the biggest threat. Terrorism is an annoyance, ultimately. I mean, it's really annoying. We've got to do everything we can to fight against it and break up those cells, et cetera. But if you don't respect what Russia's doing and China's doing and North Korea and so on with the nuclear proliferation, and we got to get serious about this at some point.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's continue this discussion after the break, and we'll also have Jay's inside perspective. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Valgas here with my co-host, Jay Amernick, and the crazy philosopher, Rick Raddatz. Not always so crazy. He's got some things to say. Anyway, before the break, we were discussing the top story today, which is Obama saying that he doesn't really want to fight. He wants to be nice. And these guys are both saying that that's a weak stance to take in public. So
I don't know that that's quite what he said. He actually said he's willing to fight. He would rather not fight, which is that's everybody's stance.
Yeah.
There's nobody who thinks that doing that first. Everybody admits, you know, from who you would call the most hawkish, and I'm talking about people who are in a position of authority, not you know a Looney Tunes cat, you know, on the fringe, but but in general, you know, the people who are elected, their feeling is that war or having to use force is a failure of diplomacy.
Well, okay.
Which
okay.
It is.
Let me tell you how this is going to get solved, okay?
Okay.
The way these kinds of multinational, you know, conflicts are going to get solved is that one nation, it could be, yes, it could be Greece, it could be any nation, really. But some democracy, a rich or poor democracy, has to adopt cap and prioritize as their internal reform, so that they get both freedom and social justice working together within their nation. And once that succeeds and it gets copied by other democracies, that's what's going to inspire nations on the fringe, nations that could tilt towards the bad actors or the good actors, to tilt towards the good actors, because they're going to see that, ha-ha, this is how it all works together. And as a domino effect or the tidal wave, we've seen it with capitalism, we've seen it with democracy. When the economizing of our collective resources, cap and prioritize, spreads around the world in the same way, that's when these bad actors are going to get more and more isolated. It'll be harder and harder for them to act in the way that they do, and we'll have this final tipping point, where finally the earth can be largely at peace in a way that we've never really experienced it before. But it's got to be by one nation, it could be us, could be somebody else, solving their internal problems and inspiring the world to copy them.
It almost sounds like you're talking about the 100th monkey, where the monkeys start washing their fruit on one island, and as soon as the 100th monkey starts doing it, then monkeys at a completely different island start doing it. It's like it's like metaphysically this is going to float through the air, and all the nations around the world will start doing it and singing Kumbaya.
No. It's not the that's the stupidest thing I've ever heard.
You don't think there's 100 monkey? You don't think 100 monkey things is true?
Well, I'm not saying. Well, you don't believe that, do you?
That the 100 they did a study. They said that they watched these monkeys.
They did a study. Okay. Okay, well, there is such a thing as like parallel evolution and convergent evolution, where just the natural forces of evolution tend towards the development of eyesight and flying and cognitive abilities and so on. But anyway, it's not like that. It's not like the 100 monkey scenario, because imagine if we here in the U.S. figured out how to cap and prioritize our government budget so that we could achieve both freedom and social justice at the same time. And it worked, okay? So we have a more prosperous nation, a more fair nation, and people are happy on that issue. We start fighting about some other issue. Do you think other rich democracies are going to stand by and just clap for us and say, hey, we're so proud of you, America, for solving your own internal problems and succeeding, becoming even more dominant? No, they're going to copy us like any nation copies a successful nation. And do you think poor democracies are going to stick around with their immature versions of social justice and socialist dictatorships? No, they're going to start copying this cap and prioritize idea. They might do it differently. They might do it better or worse. But, you know, democracy was copied for a reason, and capitalism was copied for a reason, because they work. This is the same thing, just applied to a different type of resource. Instead of economizing our political resources or economizing our individual resources, we're economizing our public resources, our collective resources. So it's the same type of thing as capitalism and democracy. It's as big as that. It's just a matter of it happening one time and succeeding, and then other nations will copy it because it succeeds.
Okay. That's putting a lot of faith in other nations to understand that it succeeds, but Okay, well, I mean, the proof will be in the pudding.
It has to succeed first.
Yeah, so we're talking like 100 years down the road.
No, I'm talking potentially 2 decades.
Okay.
Look, Germany already has a pretty aggressive balanced budget amendment, okay? I believe Switzerland did something similar. They have a cap on their spending. I think I call it a debt break. I forget. But so we already see a couple examples of modern nations being, you know, consciously more restrictive in their spending, and that forces them now to do a better job prioritizing. As soon as they accidentally or on purpose discover the power of transparently prioritizing, actually prioritizing, not just arguing about priority, that's where we'll start to see even bigger benefits, and this idea will spread. It's already happening. It's already happening. We just don't, you know, we're not there. We haven't had the aha moment yet. We're just accidentally discovering it because we, you know, some nations have learned that fiscal unsustainability is a bad thing. As soon as more nations learn that, we will accidentally discover cap and prioritize, even if this radio show doesn't, you know, go big and make it happen ourselves.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You mentioned Greece before. They are, you know, what we would call not in good shape because of that, because of irresponsibility and.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, they've decided, the people governing decided that, you know, the default is worse. So they're willing to renegotiate with the banks and accept austerity, as unpopular as it is.
Right.
Because, you know, total collapse is even worse. What cap and prioritize is austerity plus prioritize, meaning austerity plus social justice. So that's where cap and prioritize actually becomes an easier pill to swallow. So the next, easier than austerity alone. So the next nation that needs a bailout like Greece, it could be Spain, Italy, Portugal, even England is running off the deep end in terms of debt. When another country needs a bailout, maybe, you know, cap and prioritize can be the thing that they have to do to get the refinancing instead of, you know, austerity alone, a cap alone.
Well, let's take another break now, and then when we come back, we'll have Inside Perspective with Jay Amernick. We'll be right back on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vale Goss, here with my co-hosts Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz. Before the break, we were talking about the top story and the state of the movement, which Rick calls Pentonomics. And now, if you want to join in the discussion, the phone lines are open. You can call us at 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Or if you have a smartphone and you have the BBS radio app, you can connect to us directly that way as well. So now we're going to go on to the Inside Perspective, which is Jay Amernick's segment. And Jay, tell us what's going on this week with the Inside Perspective.
Vote. Go vote.
Wow, that was, you know, that was really.
I'm not
deep.
Done. That was... That's the beginning, my God.
Oh, okay.
Oh, for God's sakes. I can imagine you sitting down a long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. That's it?
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Vote, everybody.
Vote.
You got
vote.
That? Vote.
Vote's incredibly important. Early voting, I believe, opened up on Saturday. And most people are going to ignore this. Most people ignore voting, period. Most people are going to ignore the primary vote, and they shouldn't. There's a lot of local elections, and the people you are electing actually have more sway and influence over your life than when you vote on the big ticket, you know, the president, your senators, all those things. These are very important elections, and not only that, they're the ones that you can have the most influence over. One, because there are obviously fewer people voting in them. You know, obviously fewer people are going to be voting for a judge in Nevada than are going to be voting for a president of the United States. And two, there are events all over town, all over your town, no matter where you're listening from, that where the candidates are there to do a meet and greet. And you can sit there, you can talk to them, you can, you know, you can say, where do you stand on this? Where do you stand on that? And they'll tell you. They actually won't tell you, believe it or not, necessarily what you want to hear, but they'll tell you where they stand.
Okay.
Can I offer a dissenting opinion?
What? I was going to say that's the lowest threshold.
Can I offer a dissenting opinion?
Yes.
Of course.
Okay. My dissenting opinion is don't vote.
Because? Okay?
Don't vote. It doesn't make any difference. Okay? It doesn't make any difference.
Okay, but no, does it really not? Because, okay, here's when I was younger, when I was first allowed to vote, not in this country, in Canada, I would vote all the time when I was first allowed to. And then later, it got to the point where it's like, look, if I'm not fully behind one of the candidates, I'm not going to vote because it might end up tipping the scale and I don't want to be responsible for that unless I'm like 100% all in. So, but I think a lot of people get like that, and it's complacency, and it really, I don't think it solves anything. So if you just say don't vote, it's not going to make a difference.
It doesn't make any difference for so many reasons. Okay. It doesn't make any difference for so many reasons. The first reason is that just because of the numbers. The second, but here's the most important reason. This is especially for national politics, but I think it applies at the state level and maybe even local. The structure of our government is wrong. The structural incentives are wrong. It doesn't matter who you vote for, because no matter who wins, the system is structured for slow decline. Bigger, more bloated government, government waste, corruption, and the whole bit. What we need to do is cap and prioritize our government spending at all levels, so the transparency of a prioritized budget within those caps forces government to get better and better at spending, so that results matter, so that effectiveness matters, so that efficiency matters.
Okay, only but that doesn't really apply when we're voting for judges and district attorneys. I mean, this is not...
Right. And let me take both these arguments. One, here's the numbers one. First of all, last election here in Nevada, there was a state assembly seat, which was literally within like tens of votes.
So people don't know where the tipping point is. Yeah.
Right, so people made a difference. And as far as, you know, yes, cap and prioritize, but in order to do that, you're going to have to get probably some new blood in there. My sense is that the guys who've been in there forever aren't going to change anything.
I honestly don't think that the judges are the people that are going to make a difference. This is not what they do. They're there deciding what the sentence is for criminals. They're there overseeing processes like adoptions and divorces. These are not the people that are going to make a difference as far as cap and prioritize.
But it's also very important for them to be people that you are, that you, you.
Oh,
you,
yeah, I totally, I agree. Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I mean, I think anyone that gets to the level of being a judge obviously has credibility and experience. I've never met a judge that I thought, okay, that guy's got to go. But, you know, my experience with judges is limited.
All right, there was a judge here in Nevada. It might have been a little bit before your time, who was there used to be a rule here in Nevada. You didn't have to be a lawyer in order to be a judge.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And there was one individual who was notoriously screwy. She would fall asleep on the bench. She would.
Really?
It was just. It was bad.
Okay.
It was,
horrible.
No, she got. Yeah. She got tossed. She passed away since she was a.
And she was actually elected to that position.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been, not many people showed up for that election, I guess.
No, it's just no. But she was a very good campaigner. She got out there and she went to all the things and. You know, and she was very recognizable, and it was a name you recognized. I don't want to say it on the air, but you know,
right? Okay.
So that was an oddball, but still, there are, you know, that's the good news, that when there are problems with people like that, they can be, you know, voted out if people are actually paying attention. You know.
So basically, so this election, it's sheriffs, it's judges, it's district attorneys.
Yes, and it's the gubernatorial primary as well, per party, and and I think there are a couple state assembly seats. Those are the only, the judges and DA and the others are nonpartisan.
Right. Okay.
But obviously,
it's like vote for whoever's going to be controlling the, you know, crime and punishment in your area, as well as the lower levels.
Well, that's what's going on in Nevada. I don't know what's going on in other states.
Okay.
There could be very important ballot measures on there in other states. I have no idea. But that, you know, it's well worth looking at.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take that much time.
Okay. And if you want to get out and actually talk to these people, I mean, here in Las Vegas, it's easy to find events where they are out hobnobbing and campaigning. But if someone lives in, you know, somewhere in Michigan or what, how do they find these events?
You've got to get plugged in. I would just any of your like local civic organizations or religious organizations. They all have things going on. There are events everywhere. We are getting into that, you know, season, and actually sort of oddly enough, to kind of tie it back to the top story, you know, in many ways, what President Obama was saying was almost an attempt to sort of tie to sort of, you know, marginalize, you know, the right by saying they're a bunch of warmongers. And that's not, it's not his way. And that's where we get into what I, you know, refer to as the silly season, because people buy into that crap.
I'm back on the show, guys.
Oh, but you're back. You know, I know that you had a lot to say because I saw your lips moving on the Hangout, but we did not hear you. So
have at it.
Yeah. The phone went dead and then you guys didn't respond to me, but I saw your lips moving. So I knew the show was still going on, or at least you thought it was.
Yeah, we just kept going.
And
I knew that you wanted to argue more, and so this was great because it allowed Jay to actually get out some good points without you interrupting an argument. but it's virtual
uh-huh,
now. Wait,
uh-huh,
now that you're back.
I do admit to that possibility. So how much did you hear about my don't vote rant? Did you hear any of that?
You didn't cut off until after you finished that. Jay went back to talking, and then we didn't get all that stuff where you were trying to interrupt again.
Okay.
Go ahead. I'm interested to hear, because Jay made some good points about how these people are... Actually, I said, too, these people are not the ones that are in charge of the cap and prioritize. These are, at least in Nevada, it's judges, it's district attorneys, it's sheriffs, and Jay said also the lower level gubernatorial.
Let me give you a different example. Okay.
Okay. All right.
Apple Computer Corporation has $140 billion of cash on hand. They could choose to buy weapons and invade Poland if they wanted to. Okay, it wouldn't be that hard, actually. But they don't do it because the incentives, more or less, are correct in capitalism. They know that if they did anything like that, they would lose all of that wealth. And so we can trust Apple Computer Corporation's decisions, even if they're wrong, because they're going to be right enough. But in government, the incentives are corrupting. They're wrong. And so what I'm saying is it's more important to learn about cap and prioritize and to support the cap and prioritize movement and tell your friends to watch this radio show. That's the way we're going to change the world, as surprising as that might sound or impossible as it might sound. Voting, you know what? Right now we have a system where it doesn't matter who you vote for because the system is rigged for decline. I imagine a future where it doesn't matter who you vote for because the system is rigged for success. Either way, it doesn't matter who you vote for except for the transition time. As soon as cap and prioritize gets to become the national issue and it's time to vote for cap and prioritize, then vote. Until then, do whatever.
All right. So we were talking maybe 20 years before cap and prioritize becomes a functioning possibility. In 20 years is enough time for the wrong people to get into office to really, really screw it up. And I would suggest that voting today for and getting to know your state assemblyman is tomorrow's representative in the U.S. House of Representatives from the state of Nevada, for instance. Or possibly the next senator, or possibly, you know, a cabinet member. Nevada is actually, I think, the only state that has only had one cabinet member come from our state. That's it. So, but so I'd like to see that change. But
yeah,
the people on the lower level today are the people that rise up the ranks. And Steve Horsford here in Nevada is a great example. He was a state assemblyman, I believe, and then he was a state senator. Now he is in the U.S. House of Representatives. And I bet there were people who are trying to knock on his door now.
I was going to do my rant.
But the sheriffs are not going to rise up through the ranks.
I was going to do my rant on conservatives.
But I might choose to do my rant
on people who think it matters who runs the government. What matters are the incentives that run the people.
Okay. Well, we'll have your rant after the break. Jay, what were you saying? I said the sheriffs are not the ones. They're not going to rise up through the ranks.
Sometimes they do. Sometimes they have other aspirations. Sometimes they get involved with the Department of Homeland Security or other organizations like that. So
okay,
or become consultants for political organizations.
Yeah.
Okay. Doesn't always happen. They usually end up. You are correct. That's the norm. But again, someone who's involved in an election, the bottom line is you never know.
Right. Okay. Well, Rick, we're going to give you lots of time to rant and express your opinion when we come back from the break, because we've got to have Rick's rants when we come back. And we will be back in a couple of minutes on The Political Fix. Welcome back to The Political Fix. I'm Heather Vail-Goss here with Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, my co-hosts. And it's getting heated today on Political Fix. There's a lot of heated discussion going on, a lot of arguments.
I would say spirited. I would not say heated.
Spirited, okay. It's getting spirited. And Rick had a lot to say that we did not... We did not hear a lot of what Rick was saying because he somehow got dumped off the radio show. So, I mean, that was fine. We took over without him. But now it's Rick's time. It's Rick's time to speak. This is the outside perspective. So Jay gives us the inside perspective. Rick is totally an outsider. He's going to give us the outside perspective, what we like to call Rick's rant. So Rick, go for it.
All right. Well, I'm not going to rant on voting. I'm going to rant on conservatives. Okay. Conservatives and libertarians. I'm going to rant on people who think incorrectly that government has no business pursuing social justice. Okay. Now, conservatives and libertarians often talk about how, look, capitalism isn't greedy. Greed came first, and by capping greed, by having property rights, we encourage people who want more stuff to trade, and it's all voluntary, and it works better. And the left attacks capitalism because, it rewards ambitious, greedy people, it seems. Well, we can reverse that argument and say the same thing about government, that greed in government, in our collective greed, because we always want more stuff, that came first. And so to all the conservatives that complain that government is evil and greedy and we have to minimize it and all that kind of stuff, you know what? If you could do it, okay, but you can't do it. People on the left have the right to vote. They have the right to vote any way they want to, and they're not voting your way, and they're not going to go away. So that means the government is going to be in the helping people business, i.e. the social justice business, whether you like it or not. The only question is how we structure it. And so step one is to cap it, okay, and the conservatives might like that, but step two is to take what's left of government, prioritize it, so the people who need help most get the help they need. That is the pursuit of social justice. And here's the amazing thing. It's the pursuit of social justice that's going to allow the cap to become politically viable. See, a cap alone is not politically viable, conservatives, but cap and prioritize might be. It might be, if you sell it right, if you get on board. So conservatives, get on board with the pursuit of social justice by the government via cap and prioritize, or you will never get the caps you want.
Okay. So even though you just went on this big rant about how people should not vote because it makes no difference whatsoever, now you're making the plea, hey, right-wingers, the left-wingers get to vote, and that's going to undo what you do. And hey, left-wingers, the right-wingers get to vote, and that's going to undo what you do. So it does make a difference, obviously.
Yeah, blah, 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 blah. Wait, look. If we do what if we do what the conservatives in Venezuela did, which is protest the vote, and then, like, the entire block of conservatives choose not to vote, then people like Chavez get elected, get too much power, and then change the rules and stay in power, okay? So we don't want, like, one voting block to abandon the voting. We want everyone to pay more attention to the structure of government than to who's operating the structure. Because the structural incentives, okay, here's my point. The structural incentives are more powerful than any one person in the office. Okay, and if the country declines, quote unquote, more because of who got elected, that actually just accelerates the time when we're going to have to do something for real, okay, a real reform. So, look, conservatives were really happy that Ronald Reagan got elected. Well, some conservatives. Some wanted Ronald Reagan to be even more conservative, okay, than he was. But if you look at the trend lines of government, the size of government, the bureaucracy, the debt, you know, under any figure that conservatives care about, Ronald Reagan was just a little blip in a much more powerful trend. So what I'm saying is that trend line is much more powerful than any one person who gets elected. And so if you want to fix the country, if you want to fix the world, fix the structural incentives. And then, like I said before, right now it doesn't matter who you vote for because the system is rigged for decline. I imagine a future where it doesn't matter who you vote for because the system will be rigged for success. And the only time your vote really matters is when you're changing the incentives, when you're voting for cap and prioritize. That's when it really matters.
Okay.
Am I still on the phone?
Yeah, you're still there.
You know what? Yeah, Rick, you're still on the phone. I have a feeling you're not on the Hangout, though, because the Hangout doesn't seem to be...
Oh, really?
Visually, yes. But I don't think his audio's on the Hangout, because I have to keep manually switching it to him, because somehow the Hangout's not picking up his audio. But... that's beside the point because
wrong headset on.
He needs a few more headsets. Yeah.
So I want to.
There you go. How's this? Am I on the Hangout now?
Oh my God.
No, you're not. No, but anyway.
But but it's a good look. I want to get back to what you said. You know, the social justice piece. You know, and then prioritizing that. I think makes perfect sense because I think there are some things that the government is not only better at than the private sector, but it's necessary that as the government they engage in. Also, I believe that there are things that the private sector is better at than the public sector, and should it be the one engaging it from a philanthropic point of view, and it's sort of trying to figure all that out, like what specifically, you know, social justice wise should the government be involved with, and should they be funding versus the private sector?
That's a great point, Jerry. And I think of it this way. The private sector is really good at creating opportunity, but it won't be equally spread out. The government, if it is capped and prioritized, will be better than the private sector at distributing that opportunity, at helping the people who need help most get the education, the food, the healthcare, et cetera, so that they can then engage in capitalism.
Right. Well, those aren't the only, like, sort of social justice initiatives the government's involved in, and I think that there are ones where the private sector does it much better. One would be medical research. I think in general, I think the private sector does much better.
There's a very interesting way to combine the two.
Okay.
If you imagine a prioritized budget in government that's been segmented. So here is our budget for reinvestment. Okay. It could be reinvestment economically, reinvestment medically, or whatever. If that budget was also prioritized, you know, there'd be a lot of medical research prioritized because it just makes sense, politically especially. But where would that funding be put to? It'd be put to all the private institutions that are, you know, colleges or, you know, nonprofits or for-profits that are doing research. And so, and if it was prioritized, it would go to the ones that had the most strategic interest in government. In other words, that's a way of that's not social justice in the sense of poor person being helped, but that is kind of a flavor of social justice in terms of it's what's best for us as a collective. Okay, it's about our collective health.
Okay, so that's again where you have to be very careful when, because again this goes back to the prioritized concept. You know, the Obama administration famously granted all that money to Solyndra in the name of green energy. The company went bust. The reason why it went to Solyndra was because of political connections. And that is wrong, as opposed to letting it work in the free market.
It has to be prioritized, or otherwise that'll happen.
Yeah. And again, and I'm not, I point out that because it's the most, you know, recent, recent example. There are, you know, other presidents, both Democrat and Republican, have engaged in that type of behavior, you know, that crony capitalism. You know, I just use that. I'm not singling out the president, just so people don't get hysterical.
Disclaimer.
I think it's an important point to be made, though, that even if government spending were prioritized perfectly, okay, as best as we could possibly imagine it, better than it ever actually will be, even then, the type of investment that government would invest in, because it serves a strategic long-term benefit, okay, or purpose, it would actually fail more often than private sector investment. Because private sector investment starts small at first and it gets bigger as it sees more success. Government national interest spending would have to be a complement to that. It would have to invest in the things that private market wasn't doing, and therefore it is necessarily more risky. So actually, government failures, in my mind, in this kind of investment, is not proof of any kind of anything to me. It's just a question of how can we do it better, and that's always the question.
Yeah, well, that should be the question in life, with everything we do.
Yeah.
Okay. So, guys, before we're done today, any final words for the viewers, for the listeners? Rick? Well, you've been talking a lot. Let's give Jay a shot.
thank everybody for listening. Visit thepoliticalfixradio.com and, you know, contact us if you have comments, questions, and keep listening.
Yeah, we've actually got some really cool stuff on politicalfixradio.com. You can watch all of the old hangouts. You can listen to the old radio shows. Everything's archived there. And we also have Rick talking about the movement, the solution, Pentonomics, at one of his TED Talks. That video is there, and you can find out more about it. And you can also find out more about us if you care. All right, well,
and all I have to say is vote.
What? Okay. Vote, don't vote. Vote, don't vote. Vote, don't vote. Yeah, okay. All right, well,
vote if you want to. Vote if you want to.
Vote if you want to. Rick doesn't think it'll make a difference. Jay thinks it absolutely will make a difference. So get out there and do what you are called to do. I'm Heather Vail-Goss, and on behalf of my co-hosts, Jay Amernick and Rick Raddatz, thank you for listening this week. We'll be back next week on The Political Fix, and tune in at politicalfixradio.com. Thank you for listening to The Political Fix, the show that investigates a political solution combining the best of the left and the right. On behalf of Rick Raddatz, Jay Amernick, and myself, Heather Vail-Goss, we're glad you chose to get your fix with us. We need reform to fix this country, and incentive reform is what will make a difference. The five economies and resources laid out in Pentonomics and the strategies we call cap and prioritize are the focus of Rick's vision of the optimal political future. Every week we talk about the answers we've dug up among ourselves and with political experts who have the ability to make change happen. Get on board and get your fix. Streaming live Wednesdays at 9 a.m. Pacific, noon Eastern, at politicalfixradio.com.